poet. And probably one of the translations that we have is from a Russian translation of a German poem. And the other translation probably goes back to the original German. And there can be a real difference between translating the original German and then translating a translation. And it's sort of like gossip, you know. You say X to Y, and Y says, you know, Z to A. I don't. The significant thing is there, that there is the two responses to what is beautiful. There are two kinds, basic kinds of passion. One ends in lust and destruction, and the other is joy. And the point that the same thing is being seen. It isn't so much that a different thing is being seen. It's not so much that a sensualist projects the curve onto Grishenka's body, and the quote spiritual man projects a straight line on her body. I mean, the same body, the same curve is seen, and the people respond in different ways. So, and that's the point, I think, there. Nancy asked me how I was feeling coming down here, and I was about the only answer is small. And I think you're probably referring to my health, but right now I can't get over the how small a book like this book in particular, makes me feel. It's especially if you want to write a commentary on it. You feel like, well, maybe in the next 20 years it'll be done. But it is so big, and its themes are such central ones to a person, or well, anyone, that it would take time, a great deal of time, to understand and apply any of the things said in it. In much of reading these chapters, I was thinking is like a five-day trip, a five-day tour of Florence, Rome, Copenhagen, London, Tokyo, you know, Addis Ababa, you know, and you say, well, I'll have to go back someday. I'll have to go back someday. And to go from chapter to chapter is much that way. As I have been looking over the book again this week, and that's about numbers, about the sixth time, you know, it's almost each of the chapters is something that we could sit down and have a discussion on, each of the chapters. Even the ones in the first reading, you say, you know, you say, boy, he sure is long-winded. But you can talk about each chapter. And it is a book for a lifetime. It's not a book for one reading, two readings, five readings, six readings. It's something to live with and to work with those same themes that Dostoevsky is dealing with. We talked before about the charge of egoism that can be leveled at someone who reads a book to let it shine light on himself and to clarify some of his existence and his past history. And then I said that there any other way of reading was probably more egocentric. There's another charge that I read. A guy named Traversi wrote an essay against the top Dostoevsky man in criticism, and he says that Berdyaev writes at the beginning of his book on Dostoevsky that he's not interested in writing literary criticism. He wants to write about the soul of Dostoevsky, his worldview. And then Traversi says that, well, when I read that at the beginning of the book, I knew that what I would be getting is only the preoccupation of Berdyaev. And he said it in a very snotty way, in a very snotty tone. And what are the preoccupations of Berdyaev? they're the same preoccupations of Dostoevsky, and it has to do with man and freedom and spirit and soul and love and sin and evil and hope and grace and promises. Well, I guess those are pretty good preoccupations to have. And you don't have to be ashamed if you have them. And Berdyaev wasn't. And his book on Dostoevsky is tremendous, and I think there's still a few copies in the library. Well, I thought I'd write down a few things to speed things up. I was just going to write down some things I'd like to hit, and then I got three pages of them. And I don't think that's probably the way to do things. There are a number of things here that we could do that go as far back in the book as page 585. Well, even further. But I'll just say the one thing. Why spend so much time on a story about the murder of a father? And you know, parricide is one of the big, that's the word for somebody killed his father. Is Fyodor the only father that's whose life is threatened in this book? Is there another father that is being plotted against? Is there another parricide that is being attempted in certain passages of the book? Alusha's father? No, I'm not talking about him.
Our own?
Huh? Well, that certainly has something to do with it. I mean,
the prosecutor. Last season.
Yeah, and something that, who was it? Lisa tells Alyosha, everybody just loves it. Thinks this is really cool. They are offended and they love every minute of it. Wow. We get to see acted out this killing of the father. Yeah, it does have a lot to say about parricide, the dreams of parricide or whatever that many people experience. And Freud makes a great deal of that. And as you know, Dostoevsky's father was killed by the people that his serfs. And I wouldn't be surprised if Dostoevsky felt a good deal like Ivan at the time. He was a young man at the time, and quite a brilliant fellow. And could very well have written much of his Ivan from that time, and his own father being killed.
Could there be a parricide in a premature male given off by the father? Why didn't they do that? When they had him in the room, he started rotting prematurely, coming up in charge. Finding that was a convenient
need. Well, there is something. Father's eye. That's right. That isn't one I had thought of. But that definitely is part of the parricide theme.
Because Alyosha felt so bad, ran away,
mm-hmm.
and found out.
That's a connection I hadn't made at all. I mean, with the father's eye and the response of many of the people to him. Was playing out some of the parricide theme in this book. Good connection, great connection.
Not Alusha's father.
No, I don't think so. the one I'm thinking of is Our Father in Heaven. And that there are numerous attempts on his life, and much of what Dostoevsky is talking about is the kind of thought that we are living in much of modern, quote, modern thought, got its start back to time just before Dostoevsky wrote this, and he's referring to passages, he has some passages there that could have been in today's paper. Mm. And he would say that there is this attempt on God's life and going on at that time. Well, that's another connection. Well, there are a lot of other things that I got down, but you've been thinking about this for a number of days, and where do you want to go in it?
It's always worth speaking to Clever Man in the chapter. Mm-hmm. And it's the last chapter in book 5.
Isn't that referring to sophistry, like rationalization? If something's pressing you morally, if you look for the cleverness or the wisdom of man, I think, can be released from. Well, he was released from the, even confronting what it meant to kill Fyodor by Ivan's statement that all things were. I can't remember exactly what he said.
Well, what does it mean right at the time? Lots of times, in reading a poem, a line will mean something right away, and then it'll mean something else too. But what does this mean right at the time? It's always worth talking to a clever man. What has happened just before Smerdyakov says that?
They had a big argument. Well, Ivan was really mad, and he was going to head out for Moscow, but he said he'd stop at that other place, and he was getting in the carriage, and Smerdyakov was getting things ready for him, I think, in the carriage. And then he made that statement before Ivan took off. And Ivan didn't know it. Couldn't understand what it meant either. He asked him about it later.
Why did Smerdyakov want him to go to Chermashina, something like that?
So it would be close enough if anything happened.
Isn't that when he was planning on murdering him?
Hmm. Why did he want him to go?
So he'd be absolved from blame.
Well, so that there would, he'd be out, and Fyodor would be alone.
Smerdyakov explained it later. Said that he would be his faithful servant, and you'd look upon me as such later, mm-hmm. after things were resolved, mm-hmm. and Dmitri was charged with the murder, and mm-hmm. you would receive the inheritance, mm-hmm. I would be your manservant, and you could mm-hmm. bless me with some of the bucks.
Extra bucks and stuff like that. But he was going to go to Moscow. Smerdyakov wanted him to go to this other town that was closer. He wanted him out of town, but he wanted him close. If Ivan went to this other town instead of going to Moscow, then he would, in Smerdyakov's mind, it was if he was an accomplice. And so he would be close for a couple of things, mainly to protect Smerdyakov. Mm-hmm. And the clever man is that Ivan really didn't want to admit to himself, I think, at this time, what was going on in his head. But then he does say, oh, I'll go to this place. And then he thinks, Smerdyakov thinks that, aha, now this is, he thinks my plan is good.
Well, he thinks he's following the truth.
Mm. And it's always worthwhile speaking to a clever man. You're clever. You'll do, what to do here. You know what's going on.
And Smerdyakov really thinks at the time that Ivan understands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Smerdyakov's mind, he's put together, everything is legal, everything is lawful. Mm-hmm. And he's seen a hate in Ivan. And he knows that Ivan would not feel sorry if his father was dead. And then when Ivan says he will go, then he says, aha, it's sealed. know, it's kind of like he thinks it's an in-joke. And in a sense, Ivan does too. With the, you see, I'm going to Chermashna broke suddenly from Ivan. Again, as the day before, the words seemed to drop of themselves, and he laughed too, a peculiar nervous laugh. He remembered it long after. But at that time, whether he knew it consciously or not, he was saying, okay. And later he would be able to piece together that, yes, that, what else could Shmernikov think?
Was Shmernikov hanging himself and realizing that Ivan wasn't provoking him to murder his father?
No, I don't think so. I don't.
Was it a personal realization that not everything is lost?
The hanging?
The hanging. Shmernikov's mind.
Do we have any reason to think that Shmernikov felt guilty?
I think he felt that he would be found guilty because Ivan said, I'm going to lay bare the fact. I guess he'd rather have death on his own terms.
His calculations didn't work out.
Better go out fighting.
I think he might have been found guilty, but I don't think he felt guilty.
No, he didn't. He didn't feel. He knew he did it, but he didn't kill himself in remorse.
Yeah, but that wasn't said. It was left unsaid.
Yeah. Well,
about what his thinking. Shmernikov's thinking.
There are some things when he talks about, as I remember. He talks about what he had hoped for. Then he's talking to Ivan, and Ivan is going to go and talk in court. And he says, no, he won't either. And then he realizes Ivan will. And he says, well, you know, I mean...
Pretty much money terms.
Yeah.
He's lost his
well. I blew it. He says, I've thought of that. My calculations didn't work. If Ivan does this, I would, you know, go, you know, look at this. I'm not going to make it. And then just...
These are my alternatives.
Yeah, click, click, click. Yes, very much so.
Well, also, if he was so convinced that Ivan was in on that, you know, that he thought he was going to do that whole thing, you know, when he left and went off to the place, and then when, like, he was really kind of shocked when he found out, he said, you mean you really didn't suspect me as a murderer? And then when he did find out, he said, you didn't, you really didn't know. Yeah. And he said, no. And then maybe when he realized that he really wasn't behind him all that time, you know, he could have kept feeling something too, and you know, like, oh.
But how does he respond? He says, oh, you mean you really didn't know? And he says, well, I really shouldn't be telling you this then. You know? But he says, oh, well, I might as well. You know, I mean, I've already said this much. Yes, you know, I did think that you did, and I did kill him, and so forth. And I think almost at that time, too, he kind of knew that things were over for him. Shmernikov is interesting character. He's the epileptic. Dostoevsky was the epileptic, wasn't epileptic. And it's interesting that he makes Shmernikov the epileptic in the book. And I don't know why exactly, but the Shmernikov is the most clearly, a purely calculating person in the book. He calculates what's going to happen. And now there are other calculators in there who figure out, do things for their greatest, just self-interest and not even considering other people.
Yeah, but Shmernikov's the only one without a twinge.
Mm-hmm.
They all seem, except for Shmernikov, to have consequences in mind for the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
Some twinge.
It's almost like Ivan without a soul.
Yeah, the ability.
And
Shmerikov wouldn't have gotten brain fever.
I don't think so. Let's leave him. He's very far in the book, Shmerikov is in the back. And why he does it, very cold. Very cold. I think I can do this and get away with it, so he tries. But other areas that you stick in. And there's
well, I'd like to talk about that when Lisa slammed her finger.
Would you? Any others? You know that when Lisa slams the door on her finger?
Yeah, that really surprised me, that turnaround of Lisa. I didn't, maybe I should have smelled it, but I sure didn't. She one moment to me, it seemed like she was a nice, sweet girl, and all of a sudden she's this little devil. And it really took me completely by surprise.
Okay. He calls her a little demon.
Okay.
Yeah, and he sends a letter. He'll sends a letter to Ivan saying, you know, come and get me. You know.
Yeah.
What? Okay, where is that?
That's quite a ways in.
Yeah.
Maybe I want
to
take...
No, that's a good one. It's one of my favorites.
Because I remember I had to stop reading it. What?
I know.
She held the door, too. She didn't just slam it and take it out. She just wait on it.
It's the hell kitten in this one, 697.
Hell kitten?
It
sounds like a bee book, you know? Buy down on nickels, hell kitten. Okay. Little demon in this one. Right after the injured foot, you get an injured finger. And right before the hymn and a secret. Another incredible chapter.
When was it that that she turned Alyosha down? I guess I must have missed that somewhere along in my reading, because I was surprised when I came along and...
No, it never said.
Yeah.
I don't recall it ever saying. All of a sudden, she said.
Yeah.
When she decided not to marry him.
Yeah. Okay.
I think when she says it, that is the first time. I think Alyosha isn't responding quite the way she was thinking, and she feels very embarrassed.
Well, doesn't it tell that a lot earlier when she says she talks about levels and that respecting him on her level. How she praises him for doing this, how he's always on equal terms, and you see Alyosha talking with Ilyusha or Kolya, those two on equal terms. And then Lisa says, but no, I have to respect you on a higher level. It seemed like there was an estrangement beginning.
Well, respecting him on a higher level and putting yourself on a lower one, that makes seeing herself as a really bad person, and this continues. And then in this chapter, you see why, one of the reasons why she's thinking she's just evil, really evil, right? What is she doing?
See, Ivan has just left.
Hmm?
Hasn't Ivan just left?
Lisa laughed nervously. She spoke rapidly. I sent your brother Dmitri some sweets in prison. Alyosha, you know you are quite pretty. She's really worked up here. You are quite pretty. I shall love you awfully for having so quickly allowed me not to love you. Why did you send for me today, Lisa? I wanted to tell you of a longing I have. I should like someone to torture me, marry me, and then torture me, deceive me, and go away. I don't want to be happy. You are in love with disorder.
Mm.
Alyosha said, you are in love with disorder.
Sounds like something
Katrina
would say.
Yeah, she did the same thing.
She would say,
I would like someone to marry me and then leave.
Torture.
Yeah.
Torture.
And why would, okay, good point. Why would Katrina want to do that? Why would Katrina want to marry someone? She actually says things like that. She says, Yeah. Okay, why would she want to marry someone who would torture her and be a burden to her and so forth?
Isn't she a fallen woman after she took the money to Dimitri and he just bowed and let her leave when she was trying to save her father?
Yeah.
Doesn't it stem from that? It seems that after that, before she was really high and mighty, and then later on in the story she was...
In light of such goodness, she feels so evil.
Katrina?
Well, is that what you're saying?
I don't know. She was willing to sell herself at that time.
Yeah.
And she brought the money to Dimitri.
Yeah, but the business
to get the money from him.
The business of punishing herself at that point isn't.
No, not at that point, but later. Her character changes. Mm-hmm.
Well, if she said, which she does, that I will marry him and then I'll let him do anything to me and I will bear this burden and so forth. In order to what?
Well, Alyosha says to Lisa, you live too comfortably.
Yeah, this is on Lisa, but on Katrina.
Yeah.
Okay, Katrina's rich too.
Yeah.
And why would she do it? Now, there are two people responding to something that's quite similar in very different ways.
Isn't it?
That's another, again, with Katrina and Lisa. Yeah.
I get a feeling of pride in Katrina because of the real admirable response that Dimitri first had to her in giving her the money, and not making it difficult for her. It's almost like she has to go to any length to make the correct response to that and to be steadfast to that. And I get a real feeling of pride.
A lot of pride with it, but
a yearning to crush something good.
Mm-hmm. Now Grishenka wanted to have that, didn't she? Grishenka had the desire to crush something good.
Would it have anything to do with the image? I mean, like, people looked at her, and they noted things. They noted that she had it rough, like, you know, that he just used her all the time and spent her money, and she would give him money to go and spend on Grishenka and everything, and people knew her for that. Did she like that? Did she like the image she got from being... Oh, what's the word? For being, used like that and everything. Otherwise, for suffering so much, did she like that image that people saw her as one that, you know, would suffer but could bear it, you know?
Well, Alyosha does it, and is talking right what you're saying. Alyosha says, you love your laceration. Mm-hmm. You're not in love with Dimitri, you're not in love with Ivan. You're not in love with anybody, you're in love with your laceration. You get these things and so that you can, you'll do this, you'll marry him, and then straighten him out, which is, by the way, something, don't ever marry somebody to straighten them out. No way. No way. It just doesn't happen. And she's very much going to, you know, I'll marry him and then I'll save him. I'll save him. I will bear all this terrible thing. I will be the martyr, liking to feel that way. Very much liking that feeling, liking the feeling that she's been so good. I've been good, you know. As a little Jewish mother, you know, I'm so good. Made the chicken soup and you don't even care. That kind of, you know, just the way you feed your mother. But liking that feeling of being hurt, liking the feeling of being bearing. All sorts of hardship for someone else. Not because the other person means anything to her, but because she likes the feeling of being a martyr. And she loves her lacerations. Now in this, Lisa gets the laceration. She has this, marry me and then torture me, deceive me, and go away. I don't want to be happy. And she's saying that out of something for some other reason. She doesn't want to be a martyr. She feels that she...
Mm-hmm.
No. Deserves to be punished. Lisa feels that she deserves to be punished. She's evil and she should be punished. In that way, you get some connections with Dimitri, don't you? Who feels, you know, really worthless. Some of the things Grishenka says sound like that too. I'm just terrible. I'm a terrible person. Dimitri, though, has that there's an idea of disorder in Dimitri. Dimitri's life is in total disarray. And then he keeps trying to straighten it out. Here, she wants disorder. I want to set fire to the house. I keep imagining how I'll creep out and set the house on fire. And she's, how bored I am. And then Alyosha says it's your luxurious life. You take evil for good. It's a passing crisis. It's the result of your illness, perhaps. That's Alyosha says that. You take evil for good. She's inverted. You know, inverted things. Completely. Now, what is the image that she has of the baby? Oh, in this chapter also, he says, loves having killed his father. The whole town loves his having killed his father. And then Alyosha says, yes, that's true. I see that. Then she tells a story about how at Easter the Jews steal a child and kill it. This was one of those horrendous... This chapter is two of the most powerful images, right? Back to back. And they nail it to the wall, took a child 4 years old, cut off its fingers from both hands and crucified him on the wall, hammered nails into him, crucified him, and afterwards when he was tried, he said that the child died soon, within 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
You know, died soon, within 4 hours.
Is that Lisa telling
him? Mm-hmm. That was soon. He said the child moaned, kept on moaning, and he stood admiring it. That's nice. 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 I sometimes imagine that it was I who crucified him. He would hang there moaning, and I would sit opposite him eating pineapple compote.
Mm-hmm.
Total. I am awfully fond of pineapple compote. Do you like it?
Mm-hmm.
Alyosha looked at her in silence. Her pale, sallow face was suddenly contorted, her eyes burning. You know, when I read about the Jew, I shook with sobs at night. I kept fancying how the little thing cried and moaned. The child of 4 years old understands, you know, and all the while, you know, up to that point, that's a normal response, right? Read about the Jew. I shook with sobs all night. I kept fancying how the little thing cried and moaned. The child of 4 years old understands, you know, and all the while, the thought of pineapple compote haunted me. In the morning, I wrote a letter to a certain person, begging him particularly to come and see me. You know, this is, I think, the letter to Ivan. He came and I suddenly told him all about the child and the pineapple compote, all about it, all, and said that it was nice. He laughed and said that it was really nice. It really was nice. Then he got up and went away. He was only here 5 minutes. Did he despise me? Did he despise me? Tell me, Alyosha. Did he despise me or not? And then he says, it's Ivan. He doesn't despise anyone. He doesn't believe in anyone. He doesn't believe in people, of course, and he doesn't. And if he doesn't believe in people, of course, he does despise them. Good. Then he went out laughing. I felt that it was nice to be despised. The child with the fingers cut off is nice. It's despised, and to be despised is nice. And then after all this, he goes away. And what does she do? Does she mean the nice? And then she goes and coldly, you know, very coldly, goes, puts her finger in the door, slams the door with all her might, pinching her fingers. 10 seconds later, now 10 seconds is a long time to have your finger in a car door. She is clearly punishing herself. And she keeps her finger there in the door for 10 seconds before releasing it, and then she walks softly to her chair, sat straight in it, looked intently at her blackened finger, said, I am a wretch, 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 wretch. And her taking on this is far different than Katrina's taking on suffering. She loves it. Lisa wants to punish herself. She ends up saying, I'm a wretch. Dmitri said, I'm a scoundrel. Ivan said, I'm a scoundrel. This is her time to say it, to finally say it. Now, there's something else. That there's a baby for Dmitri, right? Mm-hmm. There's a baby for Ivan. Mm-hmm. And there's a baby for Lisa.
Yeah, that's a story.
Yeah, and the baby and how they respond. Now, Ivan is saying, as long as children are crucified and hurt, I will not, I don't want freedom. It's too much. I won't have it. I don't reject God, he later says. I reject his world. I reject his creation. I don't reject him. I reject his creation. Lisa is looking, when she hears about the crucifixion of this child, she is looking at a world that's like that. And when you realize that right now, there are probably, you know, thousands in over the world, there are thousands of children being beaten by their parents. Right now. I mean, this instant, there are things like what's going on. Children are being murdered. And you see that in your mind. There's this poem in the English and American Lit book, Renaissance. Right?
Not familiar with that.
Okay, that's a really neat poem. Vincent Millay did it, and it talks about that. But right at this instant, that happens, and you face that, and what do? You're tempted to go the way Ivan goes. I don't. Freedom is too much. I'd rather have a world of slaves, just so that the children, you know, aren't treated that way. Lisa looks at that and is horrified, and she comes up with an inversion. It's so horrible that she turns it over. It's like, remember the ultimate terms in contemporary rhetoric, how the GIs went to war, and all of a sudden their language just turned right over, because instead of loving people, they're learning how to kill people. And their whole vocabulary turns over just to survive in that, you know, in that kind of reality. And here, this is what happens to Lisa. And then she sees it, and then she feels that way. But after she feels that way, she feels guilty about it, because she did feel that way. And then she goes to punish herself for having felt that way. And she certainly doesn't love her lacerations. She's punishing herself. Grishenka, this whole theme of punishment, you know, in here. Why is this important? Why does Dostoevsky talk about it? Remember, he was sent to Siberia unjustly. He wasn't guilty. He was sent there for years, and he says, I deserved it. I didn't do the crime, but I deserved it. Because I am guilty. But not for that, but I'm guilty. And Lisa had to punish herself because no one else was around to punish.
What would be the inversion of her?
Huh?
I mean, what is she inverting?
She inverts the response to the child. I mean, it's so horrible. Remember, she's crying. She
yeah,
says,
I know, but what's the thing? I mean, what's the other response that she's getting out of
it? The guilt is her. She turns to guilt.
Well, you have to go somewhere. You look at, you. Okay, you realize, like that, right now thousands of children are being beaten. Now, if you really get that, I mean, if your imagination is such that you can see that, what do you do? And it created such an incredible tension that she inverted it. To survive, she had to turn the whole universe over and say that it was nice instead of just horrible.
And so nice even applied to her. I mean, it was good since they were suffering. She was suffering. That's all the way it is.
I think she was trying to punish herself for having said it's nice. Because after having said it, you're still guilty about it. Now, I used to have all sorts of dreams like that when I was young about, you know, killing people and stuff like that. You know,
excuse me.
every once in a while we, that's choreographed to keep us awake. Okay,
Dad,
yeah.
Are we allowed to punish ourselves?
Hmm? Are we allowed to? Why?
Is that a form of self-indulgence?
And is that what you mean? Does God want us to punish ourselves?
I don't know. I guess I do, but then I think, no, you're really saying, do you allow, do you want you to punish? Do I want myself to punish myself? And then I think he does.
Dostoevsky or God?
God.
Yeah, I wouldn't say no. I'd say there isn't that. That is not what he's about. That he sets us free from that kind of response to evil. We punish ourselves. He comes for joy. He doesn't come for to make us punish ourselves and beat ourselves like the flagellates, you know, in the Middle Ages, you know, just whipping each other all over the place. And he doesn't. He doesn't want that at all. And yet these people are responding to their own insides in all these different ways. You know, to want to punish Dmitri feels like he should be killed. Kill me is how he ends the letter after he says, writes the letter to Katrina that he's going to kill his father if he doesn't get the money. And he says, kill me. That's how he ends the letter. And
but that's the strongest form of cleansing that they know outside of the gospel, then.
Yeah, we feel like we have to be burned, you know. We should be crucified. Dmitri talks about that. He says, can I run away from my crucifixion? You know, I deserve to be crucified. I'm such a jerk.
Death of a heretic.
Hmm?
The death of a heretic.
What's that?
Our Christ consciousness and falling away, becoming a heretic.
I don't know. Do you have this kind of inversion? I mean, do you do this kind of inversion, or do you feel, does it make sense at all? You know, like Lisa sitting watching a child being crucified and eating a pineapple combo, is she completely insane in your own mind?
I sometimes, what it was we were talking about the other day, but it was kind of gruesome, like a child falling out of a window or something. I don't know if you ever heard a baby joke.
Yeah.
But I laughed.
Oh, yeah,
right. I don't know why. Yeah. But it's hilarious, but it's awful.
Because if you really looked at it, it's so horrible that if you really looked at it, you know, you'd be weeping, so you laugh.
Yeah.
That's one of the, those are really nervous jokes. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Tim, thousands of these nervous jokes.
And that is one of the forms of defenses, oftentimes, is laughter.
Yeah, the nervous laugh when you
protect yourself.
And we do have this reverse, you know, this inversion. We turn our responses over, and in war, you know, you're faced with lots of those things. Because what do? Scream and, you know, or shut up or come up with a rationalization, protect yourself from people being, you know, killed. Is that a new one?
You were laughing about that.
One of the jokes?
No, that movie. the Frostbite movie.
That is horrible. If you look.
Yeah.
You were laughing.
She did
show MASH as being a sort of modern type way of looking at how the people on the show have been able to handle the situation. It's obviously so absurd to them that they can't, and they don't want to be there. So the only way they can stay sane is to sometimes act. And I found too, like, in the times that I felt the most pain, or like a death of a loved one or something like that, sometimes things can be much more, everything is that much more poignant, so that you can laugh at things that you wouldn't normally see as funny. And I had a hard time with that. Sometimes I think, well, if other people were seemingly making light of things, very serious things, I could see later that it was the only way of dealing with it. And it wasn't over avoidance and escape. Exactly. It was the only way to come out of it
alive. Survival mechanism, really.
Yeah.
And this is in a sense what she's doing here, but then feeling guilty about it, and then feeling like she should punish herself for that, for the laughter, for the guilt, and so forth.
Yeah.
And we don't have this as the what Dostoevsky is saying that we should be doing. What are these people like, you know, in the book? What are most of the people like in the book?
Impulsive,
but, you know, you look at the way they're responding to certain things. Madame Holikoff says she's not hysterical, and she, because she's always hysterical, she never notices herself becoming hysterical. I mean, she's just totally bananas, you know. He says, "Oh, I have the gift of seeing right into a man's soul, and you should go to the gold mine. I can tell by your gait you're going to find gold." Fyodor and Ivan, and what kind of lives do they live? I can't remember what page it's on, but it says that things have become so grotesque. I don't know. There's no point in spending time. But that many of the characters in this book are grotesque. When you see what they're doing, compared to say what Zosima was talking about and what Aloysia was doing, and it's really grotesque stuff that's going on, and yet they are so real. The characters are so real, and right down the line, I don't think you have to be a woman to feel. To find a lot of Katrina and Grishenka and Lisa in you, and you don't have to be a man to find a lot of Dmitri, Ivan, you know, Alyosha, Smerdnikov, and Fyodor in you. Somehow he's talking about things so deep, it's deeper than you or Greek or Gentile or man or woman. And he's talking about some very, very simple. Central things. All these fellows, these people are in many ways guilty, how they are responding to guilt. How they respond to guilt, and each one in a different way. And in many cases it makes grotesques out of them. Makes grotesques out of them.
Because I remember one line about from the Bible. About the body being bound up into the body of Christ, and an arm is grotesque when an arm is by itself,
yeah.
You know, and not joined to the
that
body
is, yeah.
As they are, you know, then there's a wholeness and a completeness about it,
yeah.
as the brotherhood would be, but when they become exactly that,
mm-hmm.
because they're so separate.
Mm-hmm. That's okay, it's in, I remember the chapter, it's in talking about that, exactly what you're talking about, and I think it's a good time to read that.
One thing about the women, too, that strikes me, I guess because I identify with them, is that seeing ourselves in it, is that I don't see myself in a lot of cases, but as the day plays out, or as the weeks will play out, something very unconscious that you've done all the time, you know, whether it be male or female, will lose its unconsciousness, and you'll see it, and you'll see yourself so clearly right there, and you've never seen yourself that way before. That's why I think reading a novel is just so, you know, really, ooh, so much a part of you.
And this one is, oh, we just go back to where we were. This, in many ways, does that, where you had never thought of something before, and then all of a sudden you're reduced to this place where Ivan is right before he says, "I'm a scoundrel." And in many ways, one of the things about this book is, and it's a gloomy book. Well, you need that kind of clarity as well as the other kinds of clarity. You can also recognize some Alosha in you, some Zazima in you, too. And it's not just the scoundrel, the wretch, and all this that you see, but many, we have so many ways of protecting ourselves from.
I like how you replace clarity with gloom. I like how you replace clarity for gloom. It's a gloom book. Yeah. This clarity.
Yeah. And it's revealing something that's very real. Now it's not all it's real, but it is real, and it's somehow you can actually see part of your experience in a light that you've never seen before, and in many cases have hidden. It's one of the, you know, if you're reading this book the first time, you say, "Hey, there's some things that happened to Alosha that." Happened to me, you know, and I kind of get the feeling that he's a nice guy, and I kind of like that, and then I find out that Ivan is me, and Dmitri is me, and and if I'm going to take the one, I'm going to take the whole bunch, you know. I'm not just one of these brothers, yeah.
Trying to see that their grotesqueness is in their response to their guilt, and I'm not sure I understand that. In their response to their guilt.
Well, they...
Their grotesqueness is in their response in the first place, too.
Yeah, it wouldn't be just to their guilt. I mean, that would be misleading to say that they become grotesque only because of the guilt. But let me see.
How do they respond differently to their guilt? You know, Lisa responds by punishing herself.
Others don't see it.
Dmitri will go to Siberia for a crime he didn't commit.
That's a different form of punishment. I think Katrina changes the subject. She's going to be proud about how she's doing this thing for somebody else, and then she's going to change the subject completely. Ivan's guilt. Blows his mind. Drives him crazy. In many ways. Okay. Fyodor resists the guilt so much that he, and then Ivan too, living in guilt, and then you're going to live in a world without value, and then you're not going to feel good. And Fyodor responds that way. And Ivan, in some sense, is responding that way.
They respond in what are really absurd ways, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They respond in really absurd ways.
I think they...
Just in sort of a valueless, absurd vacuum.
In some ways, you know, it depends on the way you, you know, in talking of the responses, you really see that most, the usual responses and normal responses are ridiculous. Where the, on human terms, the absurd response is the one that makes a lot of sense. So you have Alyosha going through here responding in ways that nobody would respond, and yet you can realize that it's the most pragmatic response possible. And yet here this most spiritual guy is the greatest realist in the whole book, and he's supposed to be the most spiritual guy of the brothers, see? And we talked about this before, I think, when he gets the finger bit, you know, the guy comes down and the boy bites his finger, and he just sits there and he takes a minute to bandage it, and then he says, oh, well then, very well. Why did you do that? And that's a nutty response. I just can't imagine people doing that, responding that way. It's the most rational response possible. And it's the most loving response. And here the selfless response is the most rational, really, and the most loving. And on human terms, it's absurd. One of the things that I guess part of the grotesqueness is the person's feeling that he has to work out his salvation. Here, who is the man in here that thirsts for righteousness more than anyone else? Thirsts for righteousness more than anyone else.
Dimitri.
Clearly Dimitri. You know, he thirsts for righteousness. and then what does he do? He gets involved in all these different wild escapades. One of the things that makes the grotesques alive is besides guilt and searching for a kind of righteousness, to do the right thing, doing all sorts of wrong things, is to be remembered. And that's another big thing here. Dimitri says, remember, Dimitri Karamazov. The desire to be remembered as a human being, to be special, the attempt to be a self, and all the ways of trying to be a self without falling into the ground and dying are attempted, and they produce grotesqueness. The ways we work out our freedom. We are free outside of Christ, and then one of the things Dostoevsky is saying for the whole thing is we're free outside of Christ and we produce grotesque lives. We become evil. But here in Recollections of Father Zosima's Youth, and it's on 313 in my thing, my book.
What chapter is that?
That's where he's talking about the duel. Gentlemen, it is so wonderful, you know, the beautiful thing, he goes out. So wonderful. Oh, is it really so wonderful in these days to find a man who can repent of his stupidity and publicly confess his wrongdoing? And part of the people don't want, other, you know, many of the characters don't want other people to find out what their wrongdoing, their stupidity, their ridiculousness, and they go to great lengths to cover it up. And then finally, they just do something terrible so that to punish themselves, because they know that they are wrong and stupid and ridiculous and so forth. And then they go out and do something great to punish themselves.